explain why I'm doing this, but it's an it's about on education. It's edited by Moshe Sakalai, Professor Moshe Sakalai, and the journal is called Ten Dot. And it's a very interesting poll. They polled 175 Stern women about the women's prayer groups. And the poll is summarized essentially on the fourth page. The first page is essentially an introduction, a little bit about the role of the women's prayer groups. Then it goes about how Stern women, and so about analysis, page and a half analysis, and then just the highlights of the major findings. Essentially, what the findings seem to suggest is that the question is whether Stern women are representative of what's going on in the American Jewish community. That's a question in and of itself. But it seems that the vast majority of women are really not interested in these programs. Even those women who went didn't necessarily find it as enriching as the Fundamenta women's prayer groups. Proponents seem to maintain. You can read the results yourself. Some of them found, those that did go, found it, half of them found it spiritually uplifting, the other half didn't find it spiritually uplifting, anything special. The conclusion seems to be that, they did say that for certain celebrations, like a bat mitzvah, Shabbat Kabbat, it was a good way to celebrate it, and that we'll like it, but as a regular basis, they were not interested. You can read the poll yourself. I think the one data that bothers me more than anything else was the large number of women who believed that there was a problem with going to women's prayer groups, a halakhic problem, and went nevertheless. So I was sitting here in shul, and I was reading it, and I said, what? And I was sitting next to several people in shul. I was next to Moshe Rosenberg, and Paul Dobin, and Elliot Dobin. And some other men, and I said, look at this data, it's astonishing. He says, they said, no, it's not astonishing. How many things that people know is us, and they do it nevertheless? So this is only a question whether it's us that do it. What? Anyway, read the poll. What? No. Anyway, it's please get a chance to look at it and then dispose of it as you like. It's just sociology. Okay. Let's what I'd like to do is finish Kisui Seir by request of several people tonight. I hope to finish Kisui Seir and also discuss women covering their head in davening in general. We'll go through some of Kolot. Having nothing to do with Kisui Seir, but let's sort of summarize as briefly as possible. Essentially, things that we learned regarding Kisui Seir. We learned that there are essentially two problems. One problem is the problem of Seya Vishayelva, a Seya problem, a distraction problem. That is, that essentially men, because a woman's hair is distracting, men are not allowed to daven in the presence, at least the way the halacha says in the books, are not supposed to daven. Presence of a woman's uncovered hair. Furthermore, since it can maybe be sexually distracting, it's not proper for a married woman to walk around with her head uncovered. And as far as the sexual distraction element, that's the same we share about. But we learned that there's another halacha called Faragosh Isha, which has nothing to do with men being around, has nothing to do with sexual distraction, but it seems to be a sign that a woman is married, and based on the fact that we uncover the woman's hair as part of the Sota service, we see that a woman's hair was covered, and therefore, the Gemara maintains that therefore it's doraita, we'll talk about that in a section, it's doraita for a woman to have her hair cut. We see that the Torah, the sota, the presumed sota, or the accused charged, the accused sota, her hair was covered before she when she came to the victim of Dash. We learned also that in this question of a married woman's proper way to cover her hair, there are two elements. There was the Dat Moshe element, which was the basic biblical element, and we saw that requirement was some minimal covering, but as long as she has some covering on her head, she hasn't violated that. But there is a Dat Yehudit element, which is the based on the customs of the daughters of Israel, to be more modest, that does seem to be a modesty element, to be more modest than the women around them. And there is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, involves covering the whole head, not only covering the head with a tzomet, which would hold her hair together, but also on top of that to wear a veil, which is what's called a hadid, which will also cover the face, not only the hair, the face as well. And if we have to deal with the question, let me sort of analyze the question. Let's deal now with the question of this Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit. Let's sort of break it down into who, how, when, where, and why. Okay, who has to cover their hair part of that? This is the halacha of Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit. We saw that. Because of that Moshe, based on the tshuva we heard from the Moshe Feinstein, a married woman, she's biblically obligated to cover her hair. A widow or a divorcee or a kutsa, it means someone who may have slept around even. Halachically, she, according to Moshe, seems to maintain because of that Yehudit, she has to cover her hair. And we saw that an almana also. But it's that Yehudit which makes it
a divorcee
too. Now, the Moshe says that if it's going to affect her chances of getting remarried, that it can, in fact, be set aside because of his analysis. But according to the way they understand the Shulchan Aruch requirement, yes, anyone, that women who were married at one time, have to continue covering their hair. As far as Tula is concerned, most posts can hold that she doesn't have to cover her hair at all, although we did see that Magen Avraham seems to maintain that she has to wear her hair either braided or kept together, not totally loose. How does she cover her hair? That has to do with what's called the Tichel Shekel disputes, and we'll see a little bit more about that more tonight. When does she have to cover her hair? Well, it seems she has to cover her hair when she goes out, let's put it this way, she has to cover her hair, and this is something we'll discuss again, I hope to discuss tonight. According to most girls, it would seem that she should cover her hair when she's davening and when she's out amongst people. As far as Betula is concerned, she may have to cover her hair when she's davening, even though normally she doesn't have to. We'll talk about that tonight as well. Where does she have to cover her hair? To what extent? Well, if it's in the shuk, she has to wear the whole shebang. That she's got to wear a head covering plus the hadid plus the veil. We saw that the hadid, according to many, many posts of the hadid, which is this additional dat yehudit covering, all that goes by what's customary. And since the last 500 years, women haven't wore face veils, at least not in European code. Even though it's in Shulchan Aruch, it says that Shulchan Aruch, yeah, women have to wear a hadid, haven't seen one. In a semi-private domain, what they call a mavoi, some minimal covering, a kalta, would be good enough. In the privacy of her backyard, if there's nobody there, she can go with her hair uncovered. Although, according to the Bach, she does have to wear some minimal covering. According to the Zohar is very strict. The Zohar says even in her private, even in her bedroom, Zohar says she should cover her hair. And but Rav Moshe Feinstein, as we saw, said it's not so. If there's no one there, there's no problem. She can walk her hair and cover her hair. husbands there or children there, there's no problem. Now, there are a couple of questions that came up. People asked me, do you have to cover your hair in front of your father? The answer is no. You can hug and kiss your father. You probably can sleep in the same bed as your father. I mean, so you don't have to cover your hair in front of your father. Okay, certainly can cover your children too, there's no problem. You do have to cover your hair in front of your father-in-law and your son-in-law. Because all other halachot of kibum and the like apply to them. So what you do is your own business. But as far as the halacha seems to be, that one does have to do something. Okay, that's the law straight, yes.
Brothers
probably not. There's a discussion about, there's a whole discussion about yichud, okay, with a sister. Okay, you can yak with the sister, so they say for up to 30 days. So that tells you the time. You get a feeling for what the. A regular base, long term. For a brother, probably not. Now, that's the halacha as it's stated on the books, but we saw that there are a variety of, there are all sorts of. What I essentially said until now is pretty much party line. I haven't said anything that's smacks of leniency. There are a variety of places for leniency. First of all, as far as the obligation for a woman to cover her hair, we saw that, first of all, Dat Yehudit, we saw as a relative concept. As far as Dat Moshe is concerned, the biblical obligation, that requires some minimal covering. That's true, even if it's biblical. But what requires the whole hair to be covered? Two things. What is Dat Yehudit, the custom of Jewish women to be more modest than the world around them. Okay, so that's one source for covering. The other source for covering would be Se'ah V'She'emva. Okay, they're two different rules. As far as Dat Yehudit is concerned, that seems to be from a different response that we read from Rabbi Adaya and from Moshe Feinstein. It depends what women in society, Jewish women in society, are doing that are considered modest. Not necessarily frum. Would it be considered immodest for a woman to walk around with her hair uncovered? And I think by the consensus we would say, no. Maybe, very frum women make sure their hair are covered. But even not frum women who are considered modest, not considered immodest, if a woman's hair is uncovered. So as far as Dat Yehudit is concerned, she probably does not. Nowadays, a woman doesn't have to cover her hair based on that. She may have to have some minimal covering. But she probably could be yotzei with a lot of hair showing, according to a lenient school of Dat Yehudit. Now, everything I want to say from here on in is a machloket on it. I'm trying to point out positions of leniency. So don't think, so, yes. Everything I'm going to say, there's someone says going to disagree. As far as Se'ah V'She'emva is concerned, which is a totally different, but it also requires a woman to cover her hair, a married woman to cover her hair. Many opinions hold, we saw this in the postgame, and I worked very hard to demonstrate that this is a bona fide halakha position, that if men are not sexually distracted by hair, because they're used to seeing women walk around with their hair uncovered, the many postgame hold, it's not us or anyone. Not sexually distracting, and therefore there's no obligation to cover. It's not erva, because erva is sexual distraction. So one could argue, and again it's a minority position, but one could argue, and we saw posting who did argue this in the early 1800s when women were coming from Europe and were modest but weren't covering their hair. They argued, well, Sammy Sherva is not a problem because all women dress this way, and it's not such a distraction. And Dr. Yehudit is irrelevant. But we still have one problem. From what I told you until now, that she has to cover her somewhat. Because that Moshe requires, biblically required, some minimal covering. So the only option is to say that, and then again we saw this in the texts, that when the Gemara says d'oraita, that the woman must cover her hair d'oraita, this means based on the Sota service, this is merely recording a minhag oraita, a custom from the Torah. The Torah records the custom of the women of their time, which was to cover their hair. And in fact, we do have historical evidence that throughout the Middle East, at the time, certainly at the time of the Torah and a much later period, all married women covered their hair. It wasn't a unique custom to Jews. The Torah is merely recording what the custom was at the time that a married woman covered their hair. And as a custom, that means that it was, customs can change. Biblical commandments can change. But nowhere do any, there's no one, none of the Rishonim who count the 613 mitzvahs ever count a woman's obligation, because it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, you got to cover your hair. We only learn it from an inference that we're uncovering your hair. So that is what's called minhag oraita. It's a minhag from the Torah. Now, I was at a wedding last night, and I had a very interesting talk with a woman who attends the shir, and she said to me, you know, Arye, what you said about the fact that it's a minhag, I want you to know that when I got married, I covered my hair, okay? And my husband was giving me a lot of flack. It was causing real shalom bias problems, because my husband was saying, oh, the only rabbi's wives cover their hair. What is this bishop covering your hair? I don't want you to cover it. And he said, I held out for a while. It was causing, there was a lot of other tension that was involved, and it was causing a lot of problems in the family. So I went to Rabbi Kellerman. I don't know who was from, but it was a rabbi at the time, rabbi in Boston, and he was a tremendous talmud. And Rabbi Kellerman said, listen, if it's causing you so much tension, you should know that there are dayot that hold that it's a minhag oraita. It's only a custom. And under the circumstances, there is room to be lenient. So she said that at that point she stopped covering her hair. Then she said as an aside, I'm pretty sure Rabbi Kellerman thought that after the troubling period we got over it, that I would go back to covering my hair, but I never seemed to be able to do it. So it's very clear that if somebody would ask Rabbi Kellerman under normal situation, he would say, yes, you're obligated to cover your hair. But the knowledge that there are bona fides, she taught in halakha, which allow women not to cover, because only a minhag oraita and a minhag change, was room for him to be makel under this situation of shalom bayit, where he thought that it was imperative. I just want to bring it to your attention, because Rav Kalam was a real Talmud Chacham, and it's something that should be, that was actually put into practice. Rashi says because we're essentially reenacted. Well, Rashi gives two interpretations. But the idea is to the navla, to embarrass us, like she was undressed. You see, for a woman who... because it was a form of psychological pressure. The whole sota service, there are two analyses of what's going on in the sota service. One is to embarrass her by showing all the things that she did in front of her mother. Sort of publicly reenacting what she did. It was a form of psychological pressure. They didn't torture her. There's a lot of psychological pressure to get her to admit or to get her to be in a position of lachatz where she might say, yeah, I really did do it, and then they wouldn't give it. You have to understand, if she's guilty, right, the Torah testifies that she's going to die for it. If she admits that she slept, right, what happens to her? Her husband divorces her, that's the end of it. Right? There are no witnesses. If there were witnesses, she would never come here. It's just the husband's suspicion. But in the whole sota service, if we reach the ultimate and she really is guilty, she will die. If she's innocent and she's going through this pressure, she knows that awaits her a bracha. You don't seem to be turned on by that. But there's some beautiful agadot in brachot. Hannah, you know, is sitting there. Hannah's in the Beit HaMikdash, and she's davening at the Mishkan, and she's davening there. And we all start with Hannah and Eli and some of that, but the Gadita does such a beautiful job. Hannah says, "This is not going to be broken. I've been asking for a son, and you just haven't given me any offspring." I just, listen, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to force your hand. I'm going to go and I'm going to get myself accused of being a sota. I'm not going to be a sota. I'm going to get myself accused of being a sota. And then I'm going to go through this whole sota So we essentially see that while the majority position, well, the majority position is that a woman indeed is obligated to cover her hair, there is a minority opinion which explains and rationalizes what happened in the 1800s through around the 19th. I think this phenomenon, we saw that a lot of the response from the 1800s all the way through the mid-1900s, there was clearly a wave that women were covering their hair. To the point that my mother said that when she was growing up in the 1920s and 30s, she says, my mother, she says about my grandmother on the show, was the only woman in the whole community who covered her hair. And it was rare rabbis' wives, maybe the rabbi's wife, but other people who were, maybe they were shochtim and all sorts of other people that came in, their wives didn't cover their hair. That was true all the way through the 1920s and 30s. In the 50s already, 50s and 60s things started, the generation born, the 50s and 60s, it started rolling back, and we see that the such things become much more common. Okay, I'd like to now deal with the kerchief disputes. Let's look at page, the sources, page 13. Just to remind you where we actually saw it in the discussion for the first time. It's important to see, remember what the Shulchan Aruch and what the Ramah actually says, the Moshe Isseli says it. On page 13, we're in the Shulchan Aruch. The hair of a woman, which is normally covered, asur lekot kenegdo, forbidden to read in its presence, Kriyat Shema, in its presence with the hair uncovered, hagah afilu ishto, says Rabbi, even if it's his own wife. Okay? Just because you're used to your wife doesn't mean you're not actually distracted by her. So hagah afilu ishto, even his wife. But notice the use of the word "tulot," the virgins, the unmarried women who were never married, it's for that purpose and never had such relations. Who was wont to go there uncovered, mutar, allowed to relax the Kriyat Shema in their presence because you're used to them with their uncovered. It's not sexually distracting. And God now continues the Moshe Isselish. Now the end of the third line. But who had it? The same thing is true that it's permissible. Asarot shel nashim shel yilan that said chutz letzimtah. The hair that normally comes off, they used to wear a net around their head, on top of which they wore the veil. So the hair that is not caught up in the net, and hangs out from the net, that's permissible also because. That the women show that's all right. Now I want you to know there are a lot of women who think that if they have their hair covered and the hair is coming down on their shoulders, that's considered seyam mechutz letzimtah. That's which is mutter, even according to the scripture. That's clearly not so. The seyam mechutz letzimtah is you took all the hair together and you tied it up, and the hair that comes out of the you can't get up, that goes on the side or the sideburns, that does not go up in the net, that's what's permissible. But if you're natural, long hair, that's supposed to be up in the stomach. That's not allowed to hang down, according to
me. You mean like strands of hair more?
Strands of hair, look at me. That's how far down the neck the hair goes, but it's the short hair. The long hair is up to be up in the stomach.
So that means that the
two
are not
No, their hair is not because you used to sing with their own. What? Because you used to sing, because they're not halakhically obligated to cover their hair. And the men are used to sing with their hair loose.
It's not really a mixture of the two things. That's mixed in the relativity concept into the black and white thing.
Why? Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, those. So we've been through this many times, okay? And if you ask me honestly, how do I understand emes, pshat, I hold the relativity. Because I don't think you can explain it unless you have element of relativity. The absolute school says, no, there is an area which is absolute, and there is an area which is. That area which the halakha requires you to cover, that's absolute. That which the halakha does not require you to cover, that's relative. So they have to say, but my gut tells me it's maybe legally works, but it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make halakhic sense. Look, I mean, these are two valid positions.
Someone once explained to me that a married woman requires a higher level than you because she's eshes ish, and obviously that in itself is self-explanatory.
No, it's not. Because now, okay, what happened? Let me explain to you, because if we're talking about sexual distraction, and a hair is by definition, why does it make a difference if she's married or not married? The only thing I can answer is because in this particular woman, look, if I'm used to seeing this woman with her hair out all the time, okay, then she's not sexually distracting because I'm used to it.
Well, maybe it has to do with the level of the aveira. Maybe when someone would say Kriya Shema, the fact that there's a really terrible aveira out there, that the fact that it's an aveira in itself makes it one more.
The mind can move in that there's something about the forbidden element. The absolute school would seem to hold that way, that there's something about the fact that the halacha requires you to cover your hair that makes it awesome. But the Chazon Ish struggles a great deal, because the Chazon Ish asks the obvious question. A woman's walking down the street. I don't know whether she's married or not. Can I then read Kriyat Shema? Or suppose I've never seen that woman before. Or suppose I always see that woman with her hair uncovered. I mean, if I admit to an element of relativity here, how do I work it into the equation? It's a big problem that I've never seen her, and then somebody tells me, oh, she's married.
Yeah, but maybe the point isn't so much to Kriya Shema as it is to understand what sees it. In other words,
if you're talking to me about what her obligation is, I can understand it. But her obligation is part and parcel, part of what is sexually distracting. And this complexity of the equation, if there's a relative element where you recognize that what you're used to, it plays a role, and then but even if you're used to it, but she's obligated to cover her head, then it's awesome. It doesn't work. It doesn't always seem to make sense. The Mishnah Berurah says it's not supposed to make sense. This is what Chazal Aser, that's how he learns. If it's your obligation, that you got to cover because that's what Allah requires. And essentially what he's forced, what the Mishnah Berurah, we learned for the first time, is forced into a position saying, what Allah requires you to cover, it's not related to sexual distraction. That's the only way you can work sense out of it. It has nothing to do with sexual distraction. She's obligated to cover it, you got to be covered. And that the halacha said you can't say Kriya Shema. On top of that, in the area that is an area that's relative, it's more flexible, there sexual distraction comes in. It's the only way you can work out the equation so it makes sense. He essentially takes out for the absolute element, says there's nothing to do with sexual distraction. If the halacha required you to cover, you've got to cover it. It's irrelevant that the halacha started off because it was sexually distracting. It's irrelevant to it. Yes.
What is the difference between sexual destruction to not? When she has gorgeous hair, and everybody's saying Kriya Shema, and she's standing there with her beautiful curls. Do you have...
But you're forcing me back to the same question. See, if I'm from the relative school, let me just sort of think. If I'm from the relative school, so I would say the difference between a married woman and a ketulah is that the married woman, I'm not used to seeing her hair with her hair uncovered. And therefore, when she uncovers her hair, I'm such a distraction because I'm saying, now I see her naked. Because I always see her with her hair covered. Well, if a ketulah, I always see her that way. So I'm used to it. And that's such a distraction.
You don't know her.
That's a separate question. If I don't know her, it depends. What other woman? Very intimate and what?
I don't know.
If I go by what...
Especially these days, that everybody said that so many women walk around with that.
Well, they're Arab-Catholic, I agree with you. So therefore, what are you going to tell them?
I don't know, that...
If you're in a relative... If I host the relative school, and the majority of women walk around with their hair, right, majority of married women walk around, and that is not no longer sexually distracting, the relative of the school would say it's no longer a problem. Because it's no longer sexually distracting. Sexual distraction is the ultimate criteria. But if I hold, okay, you understand what I just said? If I hold it's Neil's relative, the ultimate criterion is sexual distraction. So a married woman may be obligated because of Farah Moshe Isha, the other, Dat Moshe, married women may be obligated to cover their hair. But if they don't cover their hair, it's not sexual distracting. Did I lose you? If I hold the absolute school, I go by what the halacha requires. The halacha requires a married woman to cover her hair. Therefore, she's got to cover her hair. And when she uncovers her hair, it's sexually distracting. By definition, halacha so codifies.
But didn't you say
If she is what? Because she's obligated to cover her hair. And if she's a pnuya, well, the halacha does not require hair to cover it. And it's not sexual distress, because I'm used to seeing it.
That's a problem
for the relative school. No, it also has to do with how a woman has to dress. Because if the relative school says, in a certain period of time, it's no longer sexually distracting, as far as Ser Bisha'er, but I'm talking about Farah or Shisha. She may be able to cover her hair. That's not no sexual distraction. She's not going to cover her hair because she's a married woman. Now, you ask me, what about Ser Bisha'er? If the relative school, might argue that Sarah B. Sher is not a problem. They may not be, that's not such a distraction. That doesn't mean she's not obligated to cover hair for some other reason.
It's all relevant to the man.
Or right. That's correct. Yes. Yes. I didn't want to complicate the equation for anyone that much. But it's clear that in countries, we have testimony in countries in Tangier, a lot of these Sephardi countries, that unmarried women covered their heads. But that was true for the whole society. It wasn't just Jewish women, they all unmarried women.
The court cases in France, and I believe in the United States now, they're of Muslim girls whose families of faith demand that they wear scarves.
Unmarried
teenagers in high school, from the time of maturity. Just like there are the cases of somebody's allowed to wear a yarmulke in the Air Force, there's also court cases of proper dress.
I don't deny that. I have to be worried right now. I'm worried about the halacha, what the halacha requires, and I admit that we're living. Let me make it very clear. We're living in a very complicated time right now. So the whole question is safer. Because it's very clear that the pendulum is sweeping back, certainly in the religious community. That women, that young women getting married now do cover their hair. And I would say that I don't know if it's the majority. I think it's the majority. Almost all the weddings that I've gone to, I know that except for one case, I know that the girls were covering their hair. Okay, or a large percentage.
Even though the young men doesn't.
Right. I remember when my wife got married, she was the first of her friends to cover her hair. And a lot of her, but she was also one of the earliest to get married, but a lot of her friends began to find some yes, some no. But certainly my daughter's generation, all her friends were covering her hair. Now, again, the question is, when I talk about this regilut, what are you used to? Again, My feeling is that you go by the general, I kept saying this because based on what Ravadia does, is you go by what the general population is doing that's considered modest. Okay, it may be religious or not religious. What is considered a sexual dysfunction? Not necessarily brother for a woman.
That's the hardest part.
That's the hardest part. I agree. You don't have to fight. I agree with you that that criterion is the hardest, and I know that there's a machlok in the post. Okay, so you could say firmly wait on that, all wait on that issue. But I not all wait, because at least I'm with Rav Avadia Adaya and Rav Moshe Feinstein. So my father-in-law, Allah would say, Allah Hashem would always say, if I have to be get him with the Rambam, I'm in good company.
That's interesting. I just remember when I was in high school, several decades ago, remember the Spanish Portuguese synagogue we had, and they are unmarried women at least at that time had to come to.
Okay, we'll talk about that. We may talk about that. Time is a fly. Yes.
Now, why do you keep saying, why do you keep putting in parentheses that it's because it's sexually obstructive? Because I can't put covering my hair because they're required to cover their hair.
Yes. Yes. No, I think it's very clear the majority of us hold that a married woman is obligated to cover her hair, biblically obligated to cover her hair. There's a minority view that says it's a custom from the Torah. The majority is the biblically argument. It has nothing to do with sexual distraction. It has to do with the married woman have to cover her hair.
So then you don't have to say when you get to betulot, because the betulot are not sexually distracted.
The betulot are not obligated to cover their hair. But I have to explain it to the absolute school. Understand. All right, let's go on. Let's continue on. We're on page 13, the last of five lines in the Shulchan Aruch. We have a line 5 at the top. Okay, the kol shekein. Okay, and certainly say al nachrit, foreign hair. That's talking about what? It said that's a shetel. Afilu, turn the page. Afilu darka lachasov. Even though she normally covers her shetel. Okay, even though she normally covers her shetel, it's all right to recreate Shema with her shetel uncovered. It's not sexually distracting. A shetel. She wears a shetel. Even if the shetel's uncovered, it's not sexually distracting. Okay, now. On that statement, look down into the Mishnah Berurah, a page where actually the last two words in the Mishnah Berurah, Ted Bob, we're going to have to turn the page in a second, okay? In the Mishnah Berurah, the last two words, Seyam Nachrit, the last two words in the Mishnah Berurah, okay? Turn the page. Okay? Okay, in back of the Mishnah Berurah, right, where you see the words Mishnah Berurah? Right over here, it says Mishnah Berurah on page 14, Mishnah Berurah. Let's see what it says. What does Nachrit mean? Karim Nachrit, la seyah shenechtach. Hair that's, they didn't have synthetic. Their choices only were, and this is what discussed the poskim, horse hair or human hair. Karim Nachrit, la seyah shenechtach, ve'eno davuk, and it's not. The end of the psara, but it's not stuck to her body. It's not her hair. The svivalei, and he holds the alzeh, that on this lo amru chazal, I don't know what lo amru chazal. Chazal did not say se'ar b'isha elda. Se'ar b'isha elda is only the natural hair that grows from your head, not hair that's formed. The gam mutar legalota. It's also permitted to uncover it. It's not considered uncovered hair. So that's what the Ramah is telling us. So the Ramah has taken the position on the shekel, the what? The shekels are perfectly all right, there's no problem, Siri Sherva. You don't have to cover the shekel either, it's all perfectly all right. Hold on. V'yesh chokin, but there are those who disagree. V'omrim, the av b'peyam, b'peyam l'chit shayach seyar b'ishe erva. That if it looks like hair, it smells like hair, it's hair. close. And it also has a problem, bad nose, because everybody looks like your hair, and it can't be uncovered. The Katava Prima Gadim, the Prima Gadim says, Prima Gadim, the Gadim is the one of the major super commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch. The Bimedina Teinu, Bimedina, Shiyotzim and the Shimbe Peyan Nachri, Migule. In those communities where the women walk out with the Peyan Nachri exposed, yes, then the smoke on the Shulchan Aruch, they can rely here on the Shulchan Aruch, actually it's Rav Moshe Isserles, but also Shulchan Aruch in other places, Umash Miminei, Shem, Dafilu Se'ak Shel Atzma, it seems from the Prima Gadim, that even her own hair, Shenechtach V'Achakach Chibra L'Rosha, which she then, she cut her hair, then she had long hair when she wasn't married, she made up from it a fall, which she now continues to wear after she's married. Gam ken yesh lakel, you can be lenient on that too. That it doesn't have to be somebody else, it can even be your own hair, but it's not the hair that's still attached to your head. Ubesefer magen giborim, kichmirpe, but the magen giborim was stretching. But katavod, it continues the prima gadim. Sham, the im, ein min haga makom shelchu anashim yipayanach. But even in that community, they don't go around with any shaito, but vaday hadinam ha-machmirim, that you're not allowed to walk around with a shetel. This is not a shetel. Mishum marit ha'ayin, because it looks like you're wearing your hair exposed. Okay, just remember that element of marit ha'ayin. So essentially, those who are in favor of shetels say that se'al v'ishe erva applies to your own natural hair. If it's not your natural hair, the Chazal never asked it. Those who are against it say it looks like hair. It's a problem of marit ayin. Now with that, it may be sexually distracting. All right, what we're going to do now is read a very fascinating tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay. On page 25. As far as the Peyan Achrit, which I was asked by your Rebbetzin, the honor Rebbetzin, Techiyah, Asher Kvotar Ato Harav, you want to know that Tipa said, right? The father wants to know, but the Rebbetzin asked the question. Hanachon Aniv Dati. By the way, Moshe Feinstein was very, very unapproachable with the Rebbetzin. Lived on the Lower East Side, and Gershon Shane tells me all sorts of stories about him. He was a really very approachable individual. And nachon lani et dati. Af she'iga man dechoshesh lesom pe'an achrit mishum amidai. Even though there are views that maintain that you shouldn't wear a pe'an achrit because of marit ayin, look, and he's going to give you the source of C, the Terence Zakeim and Arachayim Simonayim, mikom makom. רוב רבותיו וגם מאלה שסומכים עיקרי ההוראה עליהם, but most of our teachers, including those major pillars of Psak, which we rely upon, עיקרי ההוראה, the rule of the making the halakhic decisions, we rely on them, מתירים, they're lenient, והם הרמ"ר, Rav Moshe Isserles, we just read that he was in the Shulchan Aruch, he permitted it, בסימן ש"ג גימל בדרכי משה, V'magin Avraham, V'apri Megadim, these are all these major pillars of Psak. V'chein mashmagam mehagra, the governor of Eliyahu Vilna, Shesobar came, Shalom aslu b'zeh mishum amarit ayin. They didn't forbid when it came to shtetl because of marit ayin. Skip down to upepei anachrit, okay? See where the animal line begins there? Upepei anachrit. You should learn out that it requires, that there's a problem of marit ayin. Chada, the ein ze isur, because marit ayin only applies to isurim. Very interesting analysis. Marit ayin only applies to things that are forbidden to do. Isur lav. Right? The ein ze isur lav ela isur esay. Remember we read Rav Moshe Feinstein, last week, Rav Moshe's analysis of Farago Shisha was that a woman has a positive obligation to cover her hair. Not it's forbidden for her to uncover her hair, but it's a positive obligation to cover her hair. And that has all sorts of other distinctions as a result. So let's go again, let's see. Let's go back to where the underlining begins. You should not learn regard to that. The peyanachid that there's a problem with marit ayin. Chaga, firstly, the ein ze isur lav. This is not a prohibition, ela isur esay, but a positive commandment. Dara isha liyot snu'ah ulechasok l'sha. The woman has an obligation to be modest and cover her head. The ein le melef mimash aslu b'shabbat osu isur lav. You can't learn from isur shabbat where there's a isur marit ayin and other prohibitions, because those are prohibitions. And this is a positive commandment. Ve'od mishum sheberov ha'pamim nikam she'sarot hei mipeyan achrit. And second of all, because in most cases you can tell that it's a peyan achrit. Maybe in the 60s you can tell.
The women.
He said that. Hold on. Ve'af im eino nikar la'anashim, even if the men can't tell, she'ei mistaklim, because men don't look that carefully, he says. Mikomagom v'nashim achi yakiru, women can tell. They look until they can tell. Mikomagom, she'ein mistaklim min kolkach v'nashim achi yakiru. They don't look that much at women to be able to tell. Mikomagom v'nashim v'day nikah, the women can certainly tell. V'ruba d'ruba. V'ulai gam kulam nikarot. Not only he says that maybe in the majority of the cases they can tell, maybe even in all the cases the woman can tell. Lachem b'shvil mash nizdamein lefamim rukhokom shalom nikar lo'asim. They didn't come along with us. He says, fundamentally there's no problem with marijuana because you can always tell. Essentially always tell.
Today they have, I heard, custom made which that no one can tell, really. But it's like, it's made to fit the head of
my wife.
No, you can't.
My wife.
I'm
in it very seriously.
She hasn't met one with
Okay, that Rav Moshe Feinstein goes in. I don't want to go into the rest of this, the analysis, but Rav Moshe Feinstein says to the gentleman, he says, you know, you shave, right? How come you're not worried about Murray dying? He says, for two reasons. First of all, because the men can tell that the shave is not as close as you would get with a razor. And second of all, if he's a frum guy, you don't assume that he, since everybody knows that there are equal good options of using a razor blade and a shaver, or an electric shaver, why would you assume that he's using a razor blade? They're equally prevalent options.
But then you can say about many things.
So he said, you can say about many. As soon as the other option becomes prevalent enough that it's one of the options that you assume, it's an American problem. Why? What makes your mind so distorted that you have to think of the worst possible option? That's your problem. And Moshe says, you see a woman, she's wearing something on her head, right? It could be her hair, but everybody knows it could also be a wig. It's very common. Half the time, when you go to the movies, the woman, what she's wearing on her head is not her hair. She may wear other things. You know, her eyes are not her eyes, her hair's not her hair. I don't remember more details. But But the fact of the matter is, that's what Moshe's trying to point out. As soon as the other option is equally, or at least commonly prevalent, there's no more of a sand problem. Because why, you know, from why would you assume that it's a problem? So that's essentially... Because our body will say, don't. Just one second. Let's go now. Let's look at the last paragraph of the underlining is. Okay. V'lachen. With me? V'lachen, the last column, that last paragraph of the underlining. V'lachen medina. Ein kvot torato harav yachol lemchot biyad ishto harabanit ha-chashuva milbosh penachit. You cannot prevent her from wearing a penachit. Sh'af in kvot torato rotzeh lachmir. Even though you want to be machmir, eino yachol atil chumrotav aleha. You can't force your wife to be machmir the way you want her to be. Shezel rak din shalach. Because that's her mitzvah. The chivan shehi osech adin. Since as I proved, there's no marasayim problem, she's covering her hair, and the majority of poskim hold it's perfectly legitimate. Shukaro poskim, v'shegam nivet kemotam, and the halacha makes sense like them. He says, eino yachol lachmir aleha. You can't force her, and even if she doesn't want to cover her pain up. And you might say, all right, now she wear a pain up, but she got ran. And I said, no. You can't even make it cover a pain up. The kosher thing she will say that fish cover on there, she has said, look, may a pain up, she ain't the photo of all that big club. Especially since she's willing to cover it. She seems that she's willing to cover her hair. With a hat, there's no problem. No, he says.
What about the Ayosef
basket? Yeah, Rabbi Yosef, that if you're wearing a
shekel,
you must cover your head. Yes.
The one thing that was clear, remember early in the Gemara, we saw there's a Zemo Shen that you see, that the Zemo Shen were things that like affect the man, like these dogs, taking mass there, and her would feel like the woman's issue. But
if, once
he
got into,
he can't stop and Maria's
just
on the front part.
No,
I'm saying, when does it start becoming like...
The issue as presented here is a married iron.
Right.
Married iron doesn't prevent you from dying.
Okay, now I'm just wondering about this whole issue of covering your hair.
Is it outside
at all? Is there any problem you can't be
mocked here
on her?
He says, as long as she's doing... As long as she's doing kalacha, the husband has no right to ask his wife to be machmir.
But if it's a generalized one, maybe it's too long an answer for tonight. But under what conditions can spouses? I got nothing up my sleeve here. Absolutely nothing. Under what conditions can spouses impose
his chumrah? Okay, maybe he needs that he can because he's outsized to him. But whereas on each other own, he can.
This is an excellent question, and it comes up all the time in Pesach. It's seriously. Very seriously. Okay? For instance, let me give you a for instance. A husband uses Shemen Kitiyot, and the wife refuses to make anything with Shemen Kitiyot. Right? Now, in that situation, where there is a clash of customs, the halacha is machriya, tends to be machriya. The basic custom of the family goes after the husband. The right? Question is, does she have the right to be machmir for herself? Right? A lot of poskim say, yes, she has the right to be machmir for herself. Okay? There are some poskim who hold that, yes, she has the right to be machmir for herself. Okay? There are, as long as it doesn't affect the husband. Right? So that means that he doesn't care whether she uses coconut oil or cottonseed or whatever it is. She doesn't care, right? Then he or she has right to be machmir. But if he insists he wants something made with corn oil, right? He's making them shem and kidney oil, right? So she's got to make them. She gets it.
She doesn't have to.
She's not
the
baby.
She's not the baby. Don't give me this look. She says, go make it yourself. Not by kitchen. The Rebbe Bikatz says, oi to a couple where the woman says, Bina Yitev, and then he says, but I'm the boss. And she says, but I'm smarter. Bina Yitev, I'm the boss. So if it comes down to that, he says, oi, my boy.
In any case, she's obviously not smart, or she would have said.
She would have married him in the first place. Okay.
It's not only the swarming, though, or I mean, we were in the Ashara that we saw this song, Shomu Shamayim, this whole thing that women are going around with shape.
All right, look, it's in the Ramah. Because there are a lot of poskim, a lot of especially Hungarian poskim, who are very much against it. But I mean, look, there were major wars over it. I mean, there were communities where the women didn't go to mikveh for 3 months on this issue. The women said, as I mentioned, that Rav gave it down, and said, there's no more straight luck. That's okay, we're not going to mikveh. After a while, they started their last check
left.
You know, I mean,
they refused to make dinner also.
I'm not advised that it's normal to proceed. Okay, let's now, we have like 15 minutes. Let's just restart the discussion here. That's on this page. Does everybody have a copy of this page? The issue we want to discuss now is whether women, I can see we're not going to finish it today, but we'll start. And the question is whether, in general, is there an obligation for women to cover their hair in prayer? But the general obligation has nothing to do with you're married or not married. Although you'll see it does. But the question in general, there's a lengthy discussion, and this is really not our topic. Let me just start off by reading you a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. The halacha goes as follows. We're talking about Hilchot Tefillah and how to prepare yourself before you daven for Shmoneh Esrei. And the Shulchan Aruch goes as follows. You gotta put on a belt, you gotta get a belt, then he goes, now give Yesh Omri. There are those who say. Whatever it says, of those who say, what does it mean? Those who don't say. Yesh Omri. She'asur notzi askara mipiv. You can't daven, you can't learn Torah, you can't say any holy word. B'rosh megulel. With your head uncovered. V'yesh Omri. And there are those who say. Sheish limchot shalo likanes bevet haknetzet. Begin the Rosh. You can't even walk into shul, a holy place, with your hair ahead and covered. All right. So that's the Shulchan Aruch. Doesn't say anybody. Doesn't say. It says yesh omrim shasul askir. That's what it says. All right. Now, but we're not gonna do this in the logical fashion. Okay, we'll assume the Shulchan Aruch says you gotta that yesh omrim, and if he brings it, and that seems to be the halacha, and the most poskim say hold that way. The Shulchan Aruch says that you should wear your head covering when you daven, and maybe even when you just walk into shul. Now, once the Shulchan Aruch has intimated that, let's read now what the Yaskil Abdi says. Rabbi Yaskil Abdi, we're gonna necessarily do this historically, not necessarily logically the way he's got it. I just want to show you, because these are the responses referred to in the Chabadat. We don't have enough time to read the Chabadat. I'd like to read the whole thing in one setting. So we're going to do these two responses. Yaskil Avdi was Avadia Hadaya. He's one of the Svari Chief Justice in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim Beit Din, of the Beit Din HaGadol. And let's read what he said.
Recently?
No, this was in the... He passed away, if I'm not mistaken, about 10 or 15 years ago. Okay, but he was active in the 50s and 60s and 70s. I remember he was still, I was in Karen B. Yavna in 64. I wrote him a Senator Schumer, I wrote him a letter about a variety of issues. He was very active then. In the 50s, 60s, 70s, this is, okay. Me'ata. He has this long tshuva where he goes and demonstrates that what he believes in the post-game will agree with the Shulchan Aruch, that you have to cover your hair. And me'ata, achrei shitbarer, she'isu ha'kriya b'torah b'gidei rosh, u'mitzad hadin. It's not off, not being from. But the halacha requires to cover your hair. Harei barum she'en makom l'chalek ben ish l'ben isha. And just as you said, it doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch that it's only men. It says you got to cover your head when you make brachot. The ben katan the ktana. It doesn't even mean if it's a little boy or a little girl. The chulam shavim yisuvim, they're all equal. Upashut tar ahorim v'amorim utar adavar. It's incumbent upon the teachers and the parents. Limchot b'yildeh, to object to their children. You remember, especially in Sephardi communities, the boy, little boys, didn't cover their hair. They did. And only very, very often, even the adults didn't cover their hair, except when they went, shul. Shalo yitnu lehem nekot shum kriyashi b'Torah. They should object when little children want to read from the Torah, v'kirirosh, with their hair uncovered. U'min hagzeh shenagu b'batei sefer haredim. The custom which is in the Haredi schools, lahatir lebachorot lekho b'Torah b'gidirosh. They learn chumash with the bachorot, with their hair on head uncovered. Ein la amalas moch, there's nothing to rely on. Ki binyan isurim ein hadel ben ish li'isha. When it comes to prohibition, it makes a difference between men and women. U'ben yelad v'yalda. V'akolar, the yoke, mutal al hagdolim, sheyesh b'yadam l'mchot, that the adults do that, they have power to object, they should object. V'arei afilu b'li shum kriya, amru sheyesh lizaher l'chasot rosh ha'ktanim. Even without reading anything, the Gemara says that they should cover the heads of the children. The tevei alayu e'mata d'shamaya. Now that's the origin of the custom to wear the kippah in general. So that is a sign of modesty before God. But that's clearly a custom. Okay, that's clearly min ha'chassidut that you should have. That you have heaven, have feel that there's something above you, that there's heaven's presence. Somebody said the word yamnuka is yarei me'elokim. Okay, fearing God. The kol shekein v'kavachomer, and a fortiori. V'zman ha'kriya sheyesh when you're reading Torah or reading the davening, that you have to have, but it's forbidden to say with your head uncovered. And then when women go to the mikvah, that's why they got to cover their head. And they make the bracha, because you can't mention God's name without your hair uncovered. By the way, some other people discussed, we've discussed this before, but someone said that if you they put either a washcloth or shemata, or the mikvah lady, somebody else's hand, the mikvah lady can put her hand on top when you make, you can't put your own hand on. Your own hand is not considered kisui because it's your own body. But the mikvah lady can put her hand on somebody else's. A cloth, right, towel. Al-kei. Harei de eno mechalek, so you see the chesel on the thing. There's eno mechalek beze ben ish l'isha upashut. V'ashem yiten b'lev ato'im, l'ashu l'abadato v'yavdo. May those who are mistaken return to the service of God. L'irav mipanav u'lavdo b'lev avshalem, amen. V'ze ani l'ini adati, and I couldn't figure out the rest of the Russian papers. Okay, so there's the Askim Avdi. Very strong. The Beis Yaakov schools are ruining our daughters because even though they're Haredim, they don't cover their hair. And they're obligated to cover their hair when they're learning.
When they're learning or adopting.
Or making a bracha.
That's correct. If the single girls are all going to cover their heads in some way, then the commandment for a married woman to cover her hair means that to Moshe.
A woman, sure. She puts her bracha. Excuse me. She makes the bracha. Okay. Look. Look. The halacha is as follows. You got to make a bracha when you make the bracha. Okay. So you take your sleeve grow out your undercut grocery eggs and eat the rest of the apples. You haven't covered. What's the problem? You don't have to, people make this mistake. The obligation to cover your head when you make a bracha is when you make the bracha, not when you eat. So you eat the whole meal with your, you make a mochi, you make, you thought, you, when you make a mochi, you cover your head, right?
And your parmesan.
And then you cover your head with parmesan, the rest of your head's uncovered. When you're learning, when you're sitting in Beit Sefer and you're learning Chumash, you gotta cover your head. You're learning math, you don't cover your head. You know, what happens is the computer is a wonderful thing. It allows you to do